Welcome to the third edition of Vox Populi, the show by atheists for atheists. Twice a month, our team answers questions on various issues relevant to the atheist life. In this episode, we examine the issues of moral duty, communications and the internet, a thorny hypothetical on the existence of God, and heroism. Our first question is, do you think there is such a thing as moral duty? Why? Do you personally have any moral duties? And if so, what are they?
Morality is one of the most common and thorniest problems that atheists are confronted with. Not because it's such a big problem, but because it is so profoundly misunderstood. What is morality? And what is moral duty? People, well, Christian people, and those infected with their outlook, usually use morality as a code word for sexual behavior. What are the hot-button moral issues in America? Homosexuality, abortion, abstinence, stem cell research? All directly or indirectly involving sex and reproduction. Hardly anyone gets up in arms about lying, or stealing, or killing, except fetuses, or coveting, or any of the other 600-some rules in the Old Testament. And what makes a particular action moral or not in this system? Why are some things moral issues and some not at all? We don't consider spitting on the sidewalk a moral issue, but we do consider a glimpse of Janet Jackson's breast a terrible moral issue. In some cultures, women walk around topless or naked, so it cannot be the breast itself. Some people will say that morality is about social good or promoting health or life, but there is no social good or life-health issue at stake in Jackson's breast. No, something is moral or immoral, or not a moral issue at all, according to some standard of morality. And for Christians, their Bible supposedly provides that standard. Of course, if you are not a Christian, then the Bible means nothing to you. Muslims don't use the Bible as their standard, nor do Hindus or Buddhists. Christians don't use the Bhagavad Gita or the Pali Sutras for theirs. Is there such a thing as moral duty? I don't know. What I do know is that a lot of religions suggest a lot of moral duties. In Buddhism, it's a moral duty to avoid eating meat. But most Americans, wanton carnivores that we are, eat meat profligately. In Hinduism, there are specific caste duties. I don't hear many Christians talk about those. The Bhagavad Gita explains that it is the duty of the warrior caste to fight and kill, even if the enemy is one's own kin. It is also their duty to fight and kill. If a warrior kills, he is doing his duty, and will be rewarded. Besides, since humans are really spiritual and not physical beings, death can't hurt them anyhow. I've read that it is the duty of all Muslims to fight and convert the infidels, which includes Christians and, of course, atheists. Some have recently said that jihad is the duty of every able-bodied Muslim. So, what duties one has, and whether one has duties at all, seem to vary by religion. All I know is, most religions seem to think that it is their duty to harass people like me.
There are most definitely moral duties. A moral duty exists in the same way that gravity or the laws of logic exist. Entities have a definite identity and act in definite ways. And a moral duty is choosing the optimal action for your survival and prosperity. You cannot choose what is and is not immoral any more than you can choose whether or not you require food to survive, or that you're going to fall towards the earth when you jump off a tall building. So morality isn't relative, but objective. And moral duties are objective. Moral duties apply equally to all humans, because all humans operate under the same set of universal laws. My moral duties are the same as everyone else's. Don't initiate coercive acts. Don't kill, hurt, steal, lie, cheat, etc. You gotta act cooperatively with other people, because your prosperity and your survival is tied to their own. We're a dependent species, we're a social species. So we're going to have to rely on each other and not coerce each other so that the optimal moral actions are defended and enacted upon. You also have to defend yourself against coercive acts to stand up for your right to yourself, your property, and your values.
First of all, let me start off by saying that I think coercion is immoral. No one should ever do something to another's life or property without their full consent. So, the question thus becomes, are there universal moral rules that say one should do something? Well, when I look out my window and see an old lady fall, and no one around helps, I would think these were bad people. However, I don't blame the entire world, including myself, for not helping. It's just that these people are the closest to the situation and are actually letting it happen, whereas the rest of the world doesn't have the power to let it happen. And usually it is friends and family of someone in need who are the closest, because they have the knowledge about someone being in need.
Is the internet getting people closer together or farther apart? How valuable is the internet to the propagation of atheism?
I think this is a really great question, and people don't talk about it or seem to realize it enough. There's so much talk of privacy and protection and security issues with viruses and spyware and phishers and unwanted advertising, and the list goes on and on of things that are wrong with the internet, and this is all over the media. And maybe that's because we, well, at least those of us who extensively use it, that is, already know how amazing the internet is. But the truth is, the value of the internet should be recognized and talked about more often, and not only on tech TV, which no one watches anyway. As a simple example, how else could half a dozen people who've never met before collaborate on a project about a shared interest and broadcast that project to listeners around the globe? In case you're a bit slow, I'm talking about the show you're now listening to, which is just one amazing feat that technology, namely the internet, now allows us to accomplish without much effort at all. Think back to the days of yestercentury when messages traveling from somewhere in Europe to, say, the New World, for example, were brought by hand to the docks, on a boat, across the ocean, by horse, across land, and by a person to your desk. More efficient forms of communication will almost always, at least in any situation I can easily conceive of, bring people closer together. For a minority position, such as atheism, such forms of efficient communication are a godsend, if you'll excuse the pun. Consider a few examples. Someone confronting you about atheism, for instance, or someone wants to research atheism on their own, or even someone who simply heard the word in a movie or book and wants to know what it means. Before widespread and efficient communication was available, what were his options? You could refer him to a book, or he could go look it up, and a layperson may be interested, but not quite enough to get off his lazy ass and go to the library. With the internet, these difficulties are virtually non-existent. To find out about atheism, a person merely types the 7 letters into Google and reads, chats, listens, or watches to his heart's content. If such a technology isn't invaluable to the propagation of atheism, well, I don't know what is. Now, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of people who go around on the internet specifically looking for atheists to argue with and spout bullshit all over the place, and that is certainly a drawback for our cause, but in the end, with atheism floating around out there at so many places in cyberspace, the truth will eventually be heard.
Like all complex human inventions, the internet is ambivalent and even contradictory. In one way, it's a powerful organizing tool, breaching the limitations of space and time to unite people. It's phenomenally important in giving atheists access to each other and to a world of information. As you well know, there are major virtual communities of atheists online, which is really the only kind of community that atheists have. I mean, there are no atheist states or towns or even housing developments. That is one major difference between religion and atheism. Religions really do have communities and aim to have more complete ones. Atheism is just something we do in our spare time. The internet, however, can also be very distancing and alienating. People can hide in their anonymity online to do things they would not do, I hope, in the three-dimensional world. Whatever community or relationship you have online is a partial and impersonal one. Some people use the internet as a substitute for reality, not an enhancement of it. And of course, the internet is just a tool, a medium that can carry the best and the worst of human behavior, and all the crap in between. There is rich information online, as well as child pornography. People are meeting and getting married online, and people harassing and slandering each other. So, the internet, like everything else that humans make, including religion, is good and bad, unifying and dividing, helpful and harmful, all at the same time. I guess the question is, how do you use it, and what do you contribute to it in a positive way?
The internet is bringing people closer together, by any reasonable measure. The internet is nothing more than a glorified information delivery system, and we have seen in recent years the amount of information available to us individually grow by leaps and bounds. Particularly in regards to atheism, the internet has made great strides in leveling the playing field between it and theism. My neighborhood library growing up had a handful, at best, of books about atheism and related topics, but now I can tap into statewide databases and find all kinds of books that I wouldn't have had access to otherwise. Hell, I can't even buy a new atheist book from Amazon before it recommends 5 more to me. In addition to connecting me to new resources, the internet is its own resource, with thousands of websites on fields from philosophy to science to comparative mythology. The internet has made broadcast technology accessible to anyone, with streaming radio shows and podcasts like these now taking off and growing. At times, it makes me pause and wonder where all the atheists were 10 years ago, and what they did to pass the time. Was it all just a solitary march through life, never knowing who one might meet that would be sympathetic to the criticisms of religion? Leafing through the same few atheist books at the local bookstore? Most theists have the luxury of hierarchy and bureaucracy to maintain their collective identities, and the infrastructure and social systems that ensure constant communication. I realize that atheists don't claim anything similar by very definition, and most don't miss it, but I think the internet has given us a renewed collective identity and ability to communicate, with which we can only become stronger.
I think the internet is most definitely getting people closer together. People nowadays are always talking about how the world is getting smaller. Communications equipment allows for people to become more reachable, more easily accessible. And the internet is the next generation of communications equipment. It takes it to the next level. Instead of being limited to a audio format or a video format, you have a virtual world where any format of communication, any medium, can be used, or a combination of all of them. So I think that the internet is most definitely getting people closer together. The fact that you have governments that are banning internet sites shows that governments are trying to prevent this world from getting smaller, trying to prevent people from having more open dialogue with each other. And the internet is an extremely valuable tool for the propagation of atheism. It may just be a coincidence, but ever since the internet came around, atheism has been definitely climbing up the ranks in popularity and awareness. Between 1990 and 2000, the level of atheists in North America virtually doubled, and that was around the same time the internet started getting big. So I would say it's definitely helpful for the propagation of atheism.
The internet brings some people closer together and some further apart. And the people you are further away from is only physically, not mentally, although some of the emotions are obviously lost. But it's just a matter of time before everyone has an interactive video wall. And if people are further away from some people, then it's by their own choice. So clearly it's a net gain. How valuable is the internet to the propagation of atheism? The internet, as an uncensored, unlimited communication and information medium, is absolutely paramount for any person remotely interested in reality and rationality. To be able to freely communicate with anyone in the world and to freely exchange any ideas you want is fundamental to the rise of atheism, anti-theism, and anti-statism. If we ever want to live in a society free of all this coercive and manipulative nonsense, we should protect its sovereignty by all means.
Suppose for a minute that God existed. What would the world be like? Now, suppose that God did not exist. What would the world be like?
Let's suppose that God exists. What do I do? How do I talk to him? How can I know what he desires? A passing Christian directs me to the Bible. It's the word of God, he says. But I look in this book and I see contradiction, not absolute truth. I see limitation, not infinity. I see weakness, not omnipotence. Oh God, why did you write this book that speaks more clearly to your non-existence? I shriek this into the sky. A passing Christian remarks blithely that what I'm reading is not a reflection of God, but a reflection of man's sinful nature. But how do I know how to find God in this book, I say. Look for the parts that don't show contradiction, and there you'll find God, he says. I can find that nowhere in this book, I say. Shrugging, he walks away. Clearly, I can't trust myself or anyone else to discern the face of God within the Bible, so I throw it on the trash heap and turn to nature. Surely, the ultimate creator of the universe has left his fingerprints all over the wonder of nature. I pick up a rock. The tiny embedded crystals speak of millions of years of heat and compression, quick bursting from the fiery deep, rolling and tumbling in briny oceans, and of sitting quietly in the dirt for ages upon ages. It does not speak to me of God. I look at a bird, singing in the treetop. It speaks of slow change and adaptation, of an unbroken line of procreation and competition that carries back towards the shrouded mists of the past, where its ancestors marched backwards, joining mine to a primeval spark of life that defined us all. It also does not speak to me of God. Finally, I look at myself. My nature speaks to me of struggle, searching, and questioning. It speaks to me of building and creating. It speaks to me of jealousy, love, and compassion. It speaks to me of itself, and finally, it speaks to me of God. I have found God, and He is me.
Well, I've thought about this question before in the past, but today the concept of God or anything, quote, supernatural, unquote, is just so alien to me that I don't even know how to begin imagining it. Religion, you see, has nothing to do with knowledge. Religion is about accepting, not about thinking. And everything about it shows just that. So, I'm not even going to take the question seriously, since the concept God, or should I say non-concept, is born in religion.
What if there was a God? So many questions, like this one, are asked the wrong way. When you ask, what would the world be like if there was a God, the answer depends on what kind of God you mean. For Christians, the world would be exactly as it already is, since they think there is a God, and a very particular kind of God at that. I mean, if there was a God who liked to change the laws of nature every minute, it would be an unstable and unpredictable world. If there was a God who was female, I guess females would have been put in charge. If there was an androgynous God, we would all be hermaphrodites. If there was a God who was a cat, cats would rule the world. You see, it's a nonsense question, as asked. In most cultures that believe in gods, there are lots of gods. Sometimes the gods have some kind of divine division of labor, with Thor throwing thunderbolts and some other god doing something else. The Greek gods were not paragons of virtue, since they would lie and steal and rape and generally annoy humans. Some religions talk about gods that are remote and uninvolved in human affairs. I guess with or without them, things would be pretty much the same. But it is critical to remember that most of the religions that humans ever invented do not have gods at all. Buddhism does not worry about any gods, no difference with them or without them for us. And many traditional tribal religions focus their concerns on nature spirits or dead ancestors or impersonal supernatural forces like mana or chi or fate. For them, the world is what it is, with or without any reference to gods. If there was a God, of course, who was all-powerful and all-knowing and all-good, I would assume that it would be a happy, happy world for us mortals. No one would ever suffer or starve or die. However, it's pretty obvious that this kind of God does not exist. If some kind of God does exist, he, she, it, or they must be a weak, ignorant, or morally ambivalent God from the way things look down here. And what would the world be like if there was no God? From all I can see, it would look like it does right now, an unholy mess that humans made, with some of them waiting for the cavalry in the sky to come down and straighten it all out. That is something that you do not need to suppose at all. Religion is based on a whole lot of supposing. In the end, we humans have no choice but to act as if there is no God. Even Christianity says as much. Pray, and get out and do it yourself. Those who wait for God to show up die waiting for God to show up.
What the hell kind of question is this, anyway? How can we suppose that something which has no meaning exists? Well, I guess I've got to find some meaning so that it can exist. Since it's completely arbitrary, I guess I should just pick a few of the common ones and analyze them. So let's start with the traditional God of the Bible type God. In this case, assuming that God can act, of course, which he can't, but I don't think reality would make much sense. This God character's own mind would have the ability to create and destroy energy and change the orbits of planets arbitrarily and the direction of gravity, for example, with a twitch of his nose, and yet he would have no reason to do or not do, well, anything at all. That seems pretty ridiculous to me, and in such a ridiculous universe, life as we know it would be quite gone. So I don't think that there's much else to say about this situation, except that, well, it can't possibly be true. So, you ask, what if God is merely a metaphor for whatever set things in motion, quote-unquote, or started it all and left the rest to its own devices? Well, in this case, I think it's quite obvious that everything from after time zero would be as it is today. So, why not talk about time zero and before? Unfortunately, well, we can't. So, my personal opinion, we should admit that God doesn't exist. Why are some people so silly always trying to find meaning in such meaningless things? That would be a better question, at least. I think so, anyway.
Well, let's suppose for a minute that an omnipotent, all-powerful God existed. Well, first, nothing else would exist, because this all-powerful God would have existed before space and time and the universe and matter and anything else. So anything that he creates is going to exist within him and within his mind. He's all-encompassing. You can't escape him. You can't exist outside of him. And therefore, he would be the only one to exist. A kind of third-party nihilism, I think, would be the case. And there would be no reason for God to even want to create anything. He would be perfect. He would have everything he ever could want or need. For him to create anything at all, an entity that's not entirely himself, would imply a want. It would imply a need. It would imply a shortcoming. So there would be no reason for him to create space or matter or humans or anything else. There would be no reason for him to create time because he's timeless. He's outside of time. Backwards, forwards, he's experiencing all of it simultaneously. So if God did exist, none of us would. On the other hand, if God did not exist, the world would be exactly the same as it is right now.
What is heroism? Should an atheist have heroes? Who are your heroes and why?
What is heroism? Should an atheist have heroes? Who are your heroes and why? A hero is someone whose personality or part of it you admire. Usually the hero has a special gift, but it's not solely the gift that you admire, it's what's being done with it. I myself have a wide range of heroes, people I look up to in some way or another, or with whom I agree on views of life, and who help spread the cause. Music is also a form of expression with what you can agree with. My heroes are atheists and libertarians like Alex Jones, Mark Stevens, Stefan Molyneux, James Randi, musicians like Sting, Herman van Veen, he's a Dutch musician, nature guy David Attenborough, mythologist Joseph Campbell, anime filmmakers Hayao Miyazaki and Isao Takahata, both from Studio Ghibli, and I even have fictional heroes. They are Sesshomaru and Kagome, both from the anime series Inuyasha, and Lupin Sensei from the Lupin series, and let's not forget Frank and Allie. As a last note, I would like to say that it's always important to stay critical. When the situation arises, you should be able to drop someone from your hero list.
Heroism is really nothing more than a way to acknowledge the values of a particular society. Thus, a hero is an individual who exemplifies these values in their life. That's why heroes usually don't consider themselves to be anything special. They're simply doing what they think they're supposed to be doing. But that's not the point. The man who runs in the burning building to save a baby isn't a hero because he himself is special, but because he has acknowledged by his actions the values that we all share regarding human life. The atheist community at large isn't really defined by its values, but rather by what it doesn't value, theism. So it's rather difficult to argue for a standard of atheist heroism without, quote, atheist values, end quote. But I might as well give it the old college try. In the spirit of providing a counter to theism, I'll use Pope Gregory's Seven Virtues, modified, of course, for atheist harmony. Thus, an atheist hero is someone who exemplifies these virtues. 1. Faith, or rather, lack of faith in God or gods. 2. Hope, in taking a positive future view that atheism will prevail. 3. Charity, which is a concern for an active helping of other atheists. 4. Fortitude, it's never giving up in the cause of atheism. 5. Justice, in being fair and equitable with atheists and others. And 6. Prudence, in the care of and moderation with money. And 7. Temperance, in moderation of needed things and abstinence from things which are not needed. Any person who follows these virtues, I would be proud to consider an atheist hero.
I guess I suppose that heroism, or a hero, is someone worthy of recognition for some specific purpose. Someone who has contributed to our lives as individuals, significantly and for the better. I would say that's a hero. I think this differs a little bit from the usual definition of hero that you might encounter in fiction, for example, in Greek mythology. Hercules, for example, certainly fought his way out of seemingly impossible situations many times, and often getting through the times of overwhelming odds of defeat is used as the definition of heroism. Remember that woman, POW, a few years back? She was showcased all over the news as an American hero. And now, of course, I can't even remember her name off the top of my head. So, some hero, right? By the way, I just looked it up on Google here. I'm talking about Jessica Lynch. People who get through times of overwhelming odds are not heroes, okay? They're lottery winners. And why the hell should anyone worship a lottery winner? Or even recognize them? Unless they're giving you a lot of money, I guess. But granted, we as humans have empathy for them in their times of need. But why should someone who gets out of a bad situation be awarded and recognized? And how did they help our life for the better? Should we have personal heroes? Sure, I don't see anything wrong with that. But note that I see quite a difference between recognizing someone as a personal hero for yourself and worshipping a person to no end. In the end, we're all here for ourselves, and we shouldn't forget that, but we can certainly use the lives of people who've walked these paths before as our guides.
A hero is someone that represents values and principles that you admire, and they make big, bold, high-impact actions that are based on those principles and values that you admire. Should an atheist have heroes? I think most definitely. I think the concept of a hero, or someone you idealize and try to emulate because of their superior moral code or their superior work ethic, is a principle that's even more important than it would be if you're a theist. Because if you're a theist, all you have is God and Jesus, these fictional symbols that aren't necessarily heroes so much as all-powerful beings that did a crappier job than they would have been expected to, considering their power. But in an atheist world, everyone's mortal, and everyone's limited. Everyone's coming from the same bin of capability. So it's important that you find the ones that really make a big positive impact in the world and follow them or emulate them or learn lessons, at least, from them and their heroic acts. For me, my heroes are most definitely Carl Sagan, who I don't think I need to explain who that is, and James Maynard Keenan.
Our team was David Eller, Edward Grieve, Aaron Kinney, Niels van der Linden, and Zachary Moore. An archive of this feature is available on hellboundalley.com/voxpopuli. Email us at ally@hellboundalley.com if you have comments or suggestions for new questions. Thank you, everyone, for their great work, and we'll be back in 2 weeks for more insightful answers in a special edition about evangelism. This was Vox Populi, the voices of atheism.